Hi, welcome back to the Incidental Economist podcast. We've taken a couple of weeks off for various reasons, but we're back. This is Aaron Carroll.
And I'm Austin Frecht.
And today we'd like to talk about competitive bidding. It's come up a little bit in the news recently with some of the new proposals for reforming Medicare, and Austin happens to be, as far as I know, one of the real experts on the topic, so we thought it'd be a good topic for this week's podcast.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about competitive bidding, and specifically competitive bidding for Medicare, provision of the Medicare benefit. So it would involve Medicare health plans, private plans, and also possibly Medicare, traditional Medicare. And this came up, well, it's been circulating for, to be honest, decades, but came up more prominently last week when Mitt Romney put out a proposal for Medicare reform that was specific in a few respects and vague in others, and it seemed like it was just meant to be interpreted by different people depending on how they wanted to view the future. So I believe it was embraced by Paul Ryan, even though it is not consistent necessarily with Paul Ryan's vision. Some on the right of center also thought it did involve competitive bidding, although if you read it carefully, as I did, it actually didn't. But before we get into that, let me explain what competitive bidding is by way of explaining also how Medicare works today. So Medicare has a fee-for-service component that's the public option, traditional Medicare or fee-for-service Medicare. But also there's Medicare Advantage, which are private plans that contract with Medicare to provide at least the Medicare benefit and additional benefits if they wish. And the way the Medicare Advantage plans are paid is through what's called an administrative pricing system. It's a set of rules that is a complicated formula established by Congress, and basically the Medicare program says, okay, in this county, an average Medicare beneficiary, if they're enrolled in a private plan, the subsidy that will pay that private plan or the premium support is this number, and it's based on a complicated formula. What it's not based on is necessarily anything about the cost of providing that benefit, or the plan's cost of providing that benefit. And then what the plans do is they submit bids, which sounds like they're competitively bidding, but they're actually not, to the Medicare program. And those bids are the amount that each plan thinks it will cost them to cover an average risk beneficiary. And then if that bid is below the administrative benchmark that I described earlier, the plan gets an amount of money that's equal to that bid plus 75% of the difference between the bid and the benchmark. So basically, they get some extra money that they have to apply to extra benefits. And that's why the Medicare Advantage program provides extra benefits, because plans get more than their cost to provide the benefit. And so they use that to, you know, lower cost sharing, increase benefits in different dimensions, you know, offer gym memberships or, you know, whatever they want. So in recent years, the amount that Medicare is paying these plans is way above what it would cost for a beneficiary to enroll in traditional Medicare. You know, if traditional Medicare costs, you know, a certain amount, the average amount that a Medicare Advantage plan has been getting is about, you know, between 12 and 15% above that in recent years. So we're paying, as taxpayers, we're paying a premium to entice Medicare Advantage plans to participate in the program. Those additional dollars are flowing to additional benefits, but I've done some work that shows those additional benefits are not all that highly valued by beneficiaries. They're valued a little, but they're not nearly valued as high as they cost. So we're paying quite dearly for the program. So that
Can I interrupt you right there for one
absolutely.
Second? Because this is the kind of thing that always drives me insane. It's like, so as far as I can tell, Medicare Advantage was brought forward because the idea was, well, look, private insurance companies might be able to do this more cheaply than the government does, and if they can, we should let them, and they can keep the savings and as an incentive in order to do so. And that sounds great. But as you've shown and everybody else has shown, it really, for the most part, didn't work. They charge more and they get more benefits. But it did the exact opposite. If anything, it's probably increased Medicare spending. So why it's all of a sudden en vogue again to turn around and say, let's let private insurance companies compete and that's what's going to save us money, I'm skeptical about that, because it's like it didn't seem to work the last time we tried it. So why trying to increase that and sort of double down makes very little sense to me.
Right. Well, there's ways to do this that have a prayer of saving money, and there's ways to do this that absolutely won't. The way we've been doing it for 10 years or so doesn't save money. And that's just by setting prices administratively and paying plans way above what it would cost to provide the benefit through the public option. And that just doesn't work. What it does do is increase participation in the program. Now, if you're in favor of ultimately having a private-based program, it's not unreasonable to say, hey, look, we want a private-based program, but we're going to have to kind of grease the skids here, or smooth the on-ramp, and pay a little extra to get the market going. I'm somewhat sympathetic to that, but do you do it for a decade? Does it have to be 10-15% above cost? There's a point at which you say, you know what, we've been at this a while and this is all you're going to get, and now it's time to buckle down. In any case, that is an argument one could make. But let's contrast what's going on with competitive bidding, and this is something that has not been tried for Medicare Advantage, although it is how the government buys many other things. It's sort of standard in government procurement to say the government puts out a request for a service or a product and say, we'll take all qualified bidders. Let's say they're buying, toilet seats for the military or hammers or, anything. And they take bids. And then they have to choose, may not be necessarily the lowest bid, but cost would be a factor, but also the look of quality. But the bidding process will tend to force companies that want to participate to bid lower. And then the government will get, one hopes, if it works well, a good value. And this is standard. This is in fact the way many people acquire services for their home. You want to do a home renovation, you get contractors to bid. You might even try to play one off the other and say, well, this bid's lower, what can you do for me, and so forth. This is sort of the natural way to buy stuff, to buy customized stuff. But that's not what happens in Medicare Advantage, but it could. So the way competitive bidding could work, actually there's a whole range of ways it could work. There's lots of variants, but I'll describe a sort of one variant, and what it would be is all plans, including traditional Medicare, would submit a bid for how much they think it would cost to provide the minimum standard Medicare benefit to an average risk beneficiary. So a plan would say, well, I can cover this beneficiary for $500 a month. You, the government, if you gave me $500 a month, and I enroll this beneficiary, we're good. We're all set. That's my bid. So all the plans bid. It could be market by market, probably as it should be, given costs vary by market. And then Medicare or some agency would determine the lowest bid. What's the lowest number? And say, okay, we will pay all plans that lowest bid. So if you bid $500 and you're the lowest bid, we will pay you in premium support $500 a month, and that your competitor plan who bid, let's say $700 a month, they'll also get the $500 a month, but now they have to charge a premium of $200 a month to cover their cost. And so a beneficiary who wants that more expensive plan, for whatever reason, maybe they think the quality is better, maybe they think the customer service is better, maybe they have a network that they like better, they can see their doctor, they're going to have to pay out of pocket that $200 to go to that higher cost plan. Or they could go to the lowest plan at $500. Now, one of these plans, maybe the lowest one, maybe not, is traditional Medicare. It's involved. So what you've got here through this process is every beneficiary has access to some plan for no additional premium I'll put an asterisk on that because we can talk about that. There's some details there. But every beneficiary has access to an affordable plan, but it may not be traditional Medicare. It may be a private plan. And which plan it is will vary by market. So that's some protection to beneficiaries. Meanwhile, taxpayers get some protection because they're paying the lowest possible price, as determined by this market process, for providing them the standard Medicare benefit. So that's the two main benefits of competitive bidding, and it's completely different from how we have premium support today, but it's set administratively. It's completely different.
Right. Okay, so I get that, and I can see from an intellectual standpoint as to like how it could work, and I can actually understand the math, and you know, on paper it sounds totally fine. My skepticism comes from two areas. One is that it just doesn't seem to have worked in other ways. Like, I'm just not, I mean, granted that the same kind of tools and levers weren't applied with Medicare Advantage, but if anything, it went in the other direction. Part of my skepticism comes from the sense that, you know, this somewhat insurance is just paper pushing. I mean, there's no magic to it. And so the idea that somehow you can wring all of this extra money out of it always seems to me to be a little bit odd. But the third and the biggest strike, I guess, for me is that there's a lot of good evidence that insurance companies are very good at cherry picking.
Right.
And that they can work even regulated markets like this in such a way as to preferentially attract healthy people and preferentially discourage sick people from joining them, which means that sort of the last resort or, you know, standard fee-for-service Medicare may wind up getting a much sicker risk pool, which would create adverse selection and the whole insurance death spiral and everything else that's bad about this. And so I get a little nervous and a right. little skeptical about the idea that this will work as a completely open, transparent, and equal a market where that won't occur.
Yeah, so let me see if I can talk about each of these points, and I may forget because I think you made three of them. But
the first was the idea that there's a work when it hasn't before.
So it absolutely, we have not to date come up with a scheme by which private plans and traditional Medicare participate in a market and are paid, both of them paid sensibly. We have really an ad hoc scheme. All of them are subsidized. But this is amazing to me, but people don't recognize that we have premium support today. We have vouchers, or call it vouchers, or call it subsidies. All these plans are subsidized. They're paid an amount by the government to cover a beneficiary, and beneficiaries pay out of pocket for the difference. That exists today. So all we're talking about is changing how that works. Now, Medicare Part D has a competitive bidding process, and every economist I know, but maybe not all, but certainly I'm willing to bet a majority of them think that system works very well in Part D. There's other problems with Part D, but if you're going to rely on private plans, which it does, or plans in competition, which it does, which Medicare does today as well, then a competitive bidding scheme was well implemented and quite successful in Part D. By the way, competitive bidding will be in the ACA exchanges. And I haven't heard any, other than people who want to see it, you know, completely Medicare for all, I haven't heard any serious argument against that way that would work. That's how it works in the Federal Employee Health Benefits Plan, FEHBP, of which I'm a member. So it's been shown to work quite well in other contexts. So, you know, why not Medicare? Maybe the politics are different or so forth. But so there's that.
This is where I would say, like, I think that the issue is not that it's that people are against competitive bidding. It's that, you know, no one will put forward any details. And so what will happen is that something like, you know, Paul Ryan's plan will call it out. They'll call it competitive bidding when you and I both know it's not.
You know, Brian's
and so that's when people get against it. And so it's the problem is just like everything else is that it's in the details. And you can say the words competitive bidding, but you and I assume competitive bidding means one specific thing. Not everybody shares that interpretation.
Yeah, they don't often use the words competitive bidding. I hope so far it appears as if that's been reserved for the real deal. What they say is, you know, harness market competition or use the competitive market or so forth. But
maybe I'm remembering wrong, but I seem to remember okay, maybe I'm wrong, but it was, I thought when the plan came out, when Representative Ryan's plan came out, that like he was saying competitive bidding, and Alice Rivlin got on and went, said, that is not what I mean.
I think he was saying premium support, and a lot of people.
You know what? You're totally right.
Yeah,
but people, even then,
even Henry Aaron said, you know, that's not the premium support I was talking about.
Right.
Well, let me address one other thing, because I think the most damaging critique of it is on adverse selection, which you mentioned. And that is the idea that, you know, private plans are so good and nimble and flexible at designing benefits and services that attract good risks that the, you know, somewhat hamstrung, slow, traditional Medicare just can't keep up, can't compete. So they're going to get outbid not on really cost or good care management or you know, competitive networking, but on pure on selection alone, just that private plans are getting a you know, cream skimming basically is the charge.
Yep.
And traditional Medicare will just be kind of like a high risk pool, and that will drive their costs up. So when they make their bids, they have to be higher, and that'll make premiums higher for it and so forth. And it's an argument people will make if they're advocates of traditional Medicare, or they want to see it preserve, or at least not, you know, get crushed, which is fine. You know, that's certainly it's a cherished part of the program. 75% of beneficiaries are in it today. But interestingly, it's not something you hear a lot about from advocates of a public option in the ACA exchanges. I mean, it has been addressed, but it hasn't been raised as a reason not to have a public option or not to have competitive bidding. So I just point that out as a little bit of an interesting asymmetry. In any case, I don't believe you can ever have perfect protection against selection. You can have all manners of risk adjustment. So you try to ascertain the level of risk of the beneficiaries in private plans versus traditional Medicare, and you adjust the payments accordingly. You either do that, you know, ahead of time, or you figure it out afterwards, or a combination of both. There's all kinds of things, you know. So the extent to which those mitigate the selection problem, it becomes less of an issue. If those really can't do it well enough, then the issue remains, and it's a serious issue. I think it would be something that have to be examined very carefully. And one thing that would help is if private plans released sufficient data so researchers can really understand the nature of selection and how big an issue it is. Today, we have to do it through a variety of indirect means because we don't have the same quality and quantity of data from private Medicare Advantage plans as we do from traditional Medicare. I think that's a real serious problem. I know why plans don't want to release it. You know, it's a competitive disadvantage if folks know how you operate and what you do. You know, they don't want researchers singling out plans and, you know, making trouble in the media for them and so forth. On the other hand, taxpayers are paying a lot of money for these things, and I think we have a right to know where that money's going and what it's being used for.
I agree.
Of course, I'm a researcher. I'm pretty biased. This would be great for what I do. But, you know, I'm not going to single out plans and, you know, try to make problems for them in the media. I want to know what the selection is. I want the system to work better. And, you know, I would like to see, if there is competitive bidding, I would like to see it paired with more access to data, with all due protections for privacy and maybe some things related to proprietary nature of it. But I just think that should be part of it, so we can really get into what the selection is and tweak the program, you know, accordingly.
I agree. You know, I'm looking at the clock, and I think we just want to make sure we touch on exactly what Governor Romney proposed recently.
Yeah, we should do that.
So go ahead, and why don't you talk about that for a little bit, and then we can wrap it up.
So a few things. Romney did put some distance between himself and what Paul Ryan has proposed and what has passed the Republican-controlled House. One thing he said that is different, or what he didn't say, is he didn't put a cap on the growth rate of Medicare. You know, Paul Ryan, originally a while back had something like a GDP or GDP plus one type cap, and then it went to the, you know, inflation, you know, as Medicare wouldn't grow any faster than inflation, and that's what passed the House, which is a really draconian cap. It's you know, healthcare inflation is much higher than overall inflation, but Romney didn't suggest anything like that, so that's a difference. The other thing Romney said is that he wanted all plans to provide at least the Medicare benefit that exists today. You know, the standard Medicare benefit. That's a a defined benefit notion. It's saying, here's the benefit, all plans have to provide it. That exists today. Paul Ryan didn't say anything like that. He just wanted to provide premium support at a certain level, and plans offer what they offer. It's sort of, you know, the Wild West. It's a free market. The other thing Romney said that sounds, it's certainly consistent with competitive bidding, but it doesn't imply it precisely, is that if beneficiaries want to enroll in a plan that costs more than the premium support, then they pay more out of pocket. If they enroll in a cheaper plan, they get to keep the cash. That sounds like competitive bidding. In fact, it's exactly how Medicare operates today, because current Medicare Advantage plans can rebate the Part B premium, which is they can give beneficiaries a reduction. They can offer a zero premium plan, which actually means zero premium above the standard Part B premium. The standard Part B premium is around $100 per month. Mm-hmm. But they can also rebate part of the Part B premium. So they can say, you enroll in our plan, not only do you not pay a premium, we're going to give you $50 back a month. That exists today. So that is tantamount to refunding money or putting money in beneficiaries' pockets if they enroll in a cheaper plan. Likewise, if the plan's more expensive, beneficiaries pay a premium out of pocket. This is exactly what Romney said. He might as well have described Medicare as it exists today. There is actually no difference.
Yeah, okay, that was my impression as well, and I don't know. Sometimes I get a little annoyed.
But he used a lot of words, and people said, Raihan Salam said this, that he was proposing competitive bidding, but when you look really closely, he actually wasn't. Now, I think he's headed toward it. I think he will come out with a competitive bidding plan, but he's not ready, and he doesn't want to... he wants to leave himself as much wiggle room as possible for as long as possible. So he hasn't. But, you know, I don't think he's going to come out with a plan that's essentially the same as current Medicare. And I don't think he's going
to... You have a lot more faith than I do.
Well, maybe as president he would. I don't know about as candidate. Or maybe it goes the other way. I don't know. I don't think he's going to come out with Ryan's plan. I mean, he said pretty consistently.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you there. Totally agree with you there. But I'm just not...
you don't think he's going to pin it down?
I don't think he probably will. I mean, it's in the same way. I'm not, you know, not to get back on healthcare reform and everything else, but it's like that, you know, the whole segment on Replace last night, and it's amazing how many words can be said without actually meaning anything. And so,
it'll be interesting. Suppose he's the candidate, and he's debating Barack Obama, and Medicare comes up, and Romney says his plan, and Obama just says, "Hey, Mitt, that's what we have today. That's what I'm doing. What's the difference?" He has to say something.
Yes, but I think he'll be prepared. I mean, we shouldn't get too far off on this, but I think what he'll say is that, no, it's different because we'll encourage market competition and unleash the American ingenuity, and we'll have the states get involved. And next thing you know, the 30-second time it'll be up, and people go, yeah!
All right. Well, we'll see. Anyway, it's you know, one thing about competitive bidding I think is fascinating. Whether you think it's a good idea or not, just thinking through the mechanics of it and the implications and the pros and cons, it forces you to think through a lot of very important questions about Medicare. I think it's a very good mental exercise. We didn't even get to all of them. There's a fundamental question of, you know, what is the standard Medicare benefit? You know, does it have to include all the option of seeing all possible providers, or can you have a network? I just raised that as another issue. It's fascinating. If you really go through this carefully, it forces you just to rigorously question everything about Medicare, and I think it's a very useful exercise.
I don't disagree. I think that, you know, and this is why I think you've convinced me that it's something to think about and it has potential, and we're going to have to make these kinds of difficult choices about what are we willing to pay for as taxpayers versus what do we think people need to pay as premiums on top of that. And it's a very, you know, it would actually mean a little bit of a redesign of the healthcare system instead of just the way that we actually pay for care, which is what we always constantly focus on.
But, well, you know, it's there's a very simple answer, and you know it too. It's just skin in the game. That's our next podcast.
We just need to unleash the free market. Unleash it!
We have
anyway,
to do that. Okay.
There'll be plenty of time to talk about this in the many, many months to come. But thank you for listening this week. This has been Aaron Carroll and Austin Frack, and we will hopefully talk to you next week.